So has everybody finished? Some people have got to get away at 4. So we're going to rattle through some bits and pieces before we go. And for those that can stay for a little bit longer, I'll talk about the spiritual legal governing stuff, because I know some people have got questions about organisational structures and things. Okay? Right. Are we all back in the room? And don't forget, this is a start of a process. It's not fixed. But don't take this home and screw it up and throw it in a drawer and forget about it. Actually use it. Use it as a start of something that you can actually coherently shape your project, your ministry, whatever it is that you're going to do. All right, Dave's got some things to share, so I'll let him do that. Are we all back in the room? Almost back in the room. So let him settle. No. Hello. Right, last little bit from me, and then I'll sign off. For some reason, this one popped into my head, so I've shoved it on the board. I'll read it to you, so you have to try and read my writing. If you have a mandate to create a blueprint, and you don't create a blueprint, that's down to you, because you've got the mandate to create a blueprint, nobody else. If you have a mandate to create a blueprint, and you create an unclear or ineffective blueprint, that is also down to you. Because it's your job to create a blueprint for everybody. If you create a blueprint and nobody follows it, that's down to them. That's where they have to take over. Okay, they're responsible for listening to the blueprint that you create and taking part in the blueprint. Just thought I'd share that one. So you're responsible. And ultimately, I suppose you are responsible, but, you know. Okay? Thank you. Hope that was useful. I'll give you to Nigel now. Bye-bye. Thank you, Dave. Right, that was good. That was very Dave, but very good. Okay, so fold up the bits of paper, roll up the bits of paper, take them home, work on them, do some more. On the bottom of Mike's lovely agenda thing, he's put follow up on ongoing support. He hasn't briefed me on that bit, okay?
I think that was, I mean, Jonathan was also willing to give some follow-up and ongoing support to people locally, I think.
Cool, so I shall hand the baton on at the end, and you can talk to them. All right. But the bit I was asked to talk about was establishing legal and spiritual governance partnerships. You know I said about people using language that we don't always... Yes. Well, that's one of those. All right. So what I'm going to talk to you about is establishing spiritual and legal governance, which is how I interpreted what Mike meant.
All right. That's what I said.
No, it's not what you said. So, right. I talked earlier on about creating a constitution. If you're not at the stage where you need to create a legal organisation, but you have to work in partnership with somebody, and I don't mean legal partnership, I mean in cooperation or collaboration with somebody, you at least need to establish yourself some kind of constitution. So you can use your blueprint to set the governance of your organisation. The thing that your blueprint says should suggest how you want to run it. Did you get that?
Yeah.
So it should suggest how you want to run it. But you need to also set your ethos and understand how it will be protected. So if you're saying that we will never charge for our services, if you're saying we'll only ever work with Christians, or if you're saying that, you know, actually this is forever, it's got to be a faith organisation, we'll never become a secular organisation, how are you going to make sure that happens? Yeah, if you've got certain values towards certain people, or certain things that you want to make sure nobody can change, you need to write those in your constitution. Because that you can use those later on in a company structure, but actually to start with, agree them with whoever you're working with. Right, so set those in your constitution. Define your membership rules and rights. Who's in, who's out, who's got authority, who hasn't. Right? Who's a member and who's just an associate? Who's someone you're working with and who's integral? You have to know the people that you're truly partnering with. And don't be unequally yoked, by the way. Don't let other people's agendas take away from what you're called to do. Because people will come to you saying, yes, I want to partner with you, so I'm really excited about what you want to do, but can we do this with it as well? Or can we do this instead, but under your banner? No. You've got to look at how your decisions will be made. So will you do things in meetings? Will you give people specific authorities and rights to do things? Will they have specific responsibilities to do things within the organisation? So, for example, will somebody be the person that sets all the meetings, does all the minutes, interfaces with your landlord, or whatever it is? Who's going to do that? And that leads on to authority and executive powers. Who is the person, or who are the people, who've got the rights to do things that will commit you legally, financially? Who gets to put their name on the checkbook? At the bank card. Yeah? Okay. Do you need to limit your liabilities? What does that mean? Everybody understand limited liability? Yeah? No? Right. Limited liability. Are you personally responsible for what happens, or do you have a legal structure that will take the blame if you cock it up? Limited liability structures, like companies, mean that provided you operate within the law and are not criminally negligent, the company is responsible, not you personally. If, however, you set an organisation up that is just a club or a society or even a trust, the members of the trust are the people who are personally liable. Personally liable. Did you get that one? Okay. You break data protection, you're liable. One of you runs up a debt, you're all liable. One of you breaks the law, you're liable. Criminal negligence, you're liable. Okay. Not the organisation, you. So do you need limited liabilities? If you're working with partner agencies, external companies, international organisations, anything that is another constituted body, you probably do need some form of limited liability. Have you clearly defined your mission and your purpose? If you've got a company, you can create objects. You don't have to have objects these days in companies. They changed the Companies Act. But it's really useful if you say what your company is to do, your charity is to do. Set those things as objects and purpose. So you can clearly define your mission when you've actually nailed down your why of your blueprint. Yeah. So that'll help you set that in place. And then you need to put the rules in changing this constitution. So if we ever want to change this, what process are we going to go through and why are we going to go through that process? Because you might think at the start, no, it's all going to be fine. And then you get a year or two down the road, it's like, ooh, the world's changed. God's given us a bigger picture. This is going bigger than we think. We need to change the rules of how we operate. If you've not constituted that, how are you going to agree it? How are you going to look at that? And either that is going to be in, you know, even if it's just a membership group or if it's going to be legal liability, you've got to figure out how to make changes when you need to make changes, okay? So that's just some simple stuff on that. Right. Maintain spiritual oversight. This one is really important for faith-based organisations, Christian organisations. If you want to make sure that you maintain a Christian ethos, you're going to need to have the way your mountains, benches, members, authorities work written in to how you constitute the organisation. So for example, here, the members of the company behind the charity that runs this building are the Bench of Three. So the people who have constituted the company are the Bench of Three. They then appoint the directors. The directors employ the staff and employ the employees. Right? So they run the executive side of it, I run the executive side of it. But the members can remove the directors if they have to. If the directors of the company, the trustees of the company, do not outwork it in the ethos and the practice and for the objects for which you were set up, you can say you've got to go because you're not doing what we were setting you up to do. Okay? So that's really important. So also you've got to understand how that works in practice. We've got mountains of authority, we've got benches of three, but then we've got legal frameworks of directors and trustees who have to keep minutes, who have to have executive powers, who have to tell people what to do, hire and fire, have insurance, all the stuff that companies do, right? It's really useful if your spiritual governance is the same as your legal setup. Get me? So if your benches of three are actually members of the organisation, you've tied the two together and kept that link. If they're not, you can have some problems. Lindy, is that the route you've taken as well? There we go. Okay. So you must maintain spiritual oversight. So what kind of organisational structures? It's what suits you. It really does. Your blueprint will tell you what you need. Okay? Your blueprint will tell you what you need. There is no right or wrong, but I will say the most important thing is to future-proof what you do. Just because it's only three people now, will it be three people in 10 or 20 years? Yep. Okay, cool. You can be a society. Will it still be the same three people? Maybe not. Depends on your constitution, how old they are, whether they get fed up with you. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why it might not be. So, you need to also understand your risks. You must do your due diligence. When you pick your organizational structure, it must be appropriate for the activities you're going to outwork. Okay? If you're going to run an ecclesia, just a church meeting group, and you're going to meet once a week on a Sunday, and you're going to have a bit of worship and some teaching, you possibly don't need to have the same legal framework as if you're going to run a mental health project, working with the NHS, and interfacing with young people who've got safeguarding needs. Do you? So make sure it's appropriate. If you're not sure, get advice. Yeah? Get advice. So the scale of your vision should be matched by the strongest organisational framework. Don't choose the easy option. Okay? Just because an organisational structure or framework is simple doesn't mean it's the best one. And sometimes you have to do what is right to protect yourselves, not just what is convenient. Okay? So choose the one that you know will be future-proof and be the best. So ensure people and assets are properly protected. That's a really big one. You've got to make sure that the people that work for you, with you, and you're responsible for, so not just your members, but actually your volunteers, your staff, your trustees, your beneficiaries, your stakeholders, everybody that you work with, the organisational structure has to have a regard for how they interface with you as well. All right? Protecting your people is a responsibility you cannot shirk. So what powers do you need? Nearly there, it's nearly time to go in. Right, what powers do you need? Do you need to accept donations, for example? If you're a limited company, you can't take donations. Why should someone give a limited company money? Isn't that called money laundering? You can give a company money for trading. Yeah? I've delivered a course, I got paid for it. Okay. You can't just go, oh, today we're going to pass the basket round at the end of this if you're a company. That's not allowed. Yeah? You can't do that. Do you need to employ staff or directors? Maybe not now, but do you later? And actually, do you consider that you might want to pay yourselves at some point? If you do, then you need to make sure your organisation allows you to do that. Yeah. Some charitable structures will not allow trustees to be paid, so you can't be employed or trustee and be paid. You can be an employee as a manager, but you can't be a trustee and be paid. Oh, weird. So you've got to look at the right structure. Can you be paid? Can you not be paid? Right. Do you ever need to borrow money, have a mortgage, have a lease, own tangible assets, have land? Does any of your vision require property? If it does, then you need to make sure that the framework and the structure that you use is capable of owning assets. If you do it through a trust or a partnership, or a club or a society, you will have a property trustee who will personally be responsible for those assets. We're going to lease a building. It's going to cost us £50,000 a year, but we're not a company. Hands up, who wants to be the trustee that signs to be the property trustee? No, really. Because when we set this up, when we started here, we didn't have the right legal framework in place. So Mike had to sign the lease. Brave. Right? But he did. We are a trust for the church. We are a charitable company for Freedom Community Alliance. And we are a social enterprise for Freedom Social Enterprises.
Is that like
a CIC? No. It's a company limited by guarantee. I'll come on to those. All right. Will you want to contract to provide a service, for example? Will you have to contract with people? Will you either contract for people for them to deliver something for you, or will you receive a contract from somebody to deliver something for them? If so, then you need the right legal framework that enables you to have a contract. Do you want to give money away? Make grants?
In retrospect,
yep.
Would you have changed your legal structure?
Yep.
Yeah.
We would probably be a CIO.
Yeah. I wasn't on the board then.
Sorry,
why did you do that? Because
yeah.
It was historic.
Oh, this is 1994.
Yeah, yeah. This is 1994 that the Church Trust was originally set up, and it grew to the point we took this building on in December 2005, right?
Could you change your legal governance,
though? Yeah, and we have. Yeah. I'm not saying it's all the same. Yes, that's still the same, but what we've done is we've got... Yeah, I could go into it.
Sorry.
But it's all right now.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to... Oh, I sleep fine. Yeah. God bless you guys. Right. Do you need to give money away? Do you want to make grants? Sometimes you do. We're actually within the Church Trust and within Freedom Apostolic Ministries. We give money. In Community Alliance, we give money. Do you need to hold a bank account? This is a really simple one. Do you need to hold a bank account in order to do what you're doing? Will your ministry, your mission, your project, your thing require handling money? Duh. So can you legally hold a bank account? And if you do hold a bank account, is it a personal bank account, a business bank account? Who's got access to that money? It's really, really a simple thing, isn't it? You've got to look at your governance around handling money and having a bank account.
You can't mix personal.
So I couldn't have a bank account in my name and then use it for stuff for the ministry. Okay. Even if I had a separate account as a personal account, only in my name that was in, say, Freedom's name as well, and I only used it for that, that would still be wrong. Yeah. So if you've got a bank account, or you need a bank account for your ministry, then you're going to look at what kind of organisational framework will allow you to have that. A club and society can have one, that's fine. But you have to have multiple members and multiple signatories and all that malarkey. Okay, so just think about what's appropriate for you. So common structures, club or society. Clubs and societies tend to be sports. Bridge. Small things. So you can do it that way. Trust, that's the next step up. Group of people getting together under a constitution or a document saying we are going to hold this in trust and operate this for these purposes. And church trusts used to be really common, they're less so now. But it was when Mike set it up, so that's all good. Yeah. Although the original members of that trust are...
Me.
You. Yeah, everyone else is gone. Yeah, so again, future-proofing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, yeah.
Part of it, yeah, it's like, was it something he said? It certainly was.
Lots of things I said.
Was it something you taught?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. The next one, this is a relatively new one, charitable incorporated organisation. We all heard of the CIO. Only because he just said it. Right, okay. This is a new thing. I'll come to that in a minute, actually. Right. The next one of that is a charitable company, limited by guarantee. Why limited by guarantee?
Trustees don't lose their houses.
You think? And or a limited company. Right, a company limited by guarantee is different to a company that is just private limited by shares. Okay. So
is it better?
I'll come on to that. Right, so club or society, ideal for small groups with a small project, really simple to set up. You need a constitution because you should have a committee. Alright? Any bank will expect there to be a committee, insurance will expect there to be a committee. Right. More than one person responsible with defined roles. Who's the treasurer? Who's the chairperson? Who's the whatever? Okay. You do have personal liability. So that sucks. Okay. So think about that very carefully. There is no ability in law to contract except a person designated by the club or society to do the contracting, and then they are personally liable. That sucks as well. Bank accounts are held in personal names. So in other words, you have named individuals on the accounts rather than it's a company name. And, ooh, there's no C on there. Contracts done by committee members. All committee members. So if you have to enter an arrangement, somebody personally has to guarantee that that's going to happen. Don't like that. So it's fine if you're going to just run a football club. amateur football club or something like that, where you take a few subs and all you do is just play footy. A trust, it's a formal version of a club or society, so it's where the members agree to act as a group, but this one can be registered as a charity. Yeah, it's got recognition in law as a club, as a trust rather, but it isn't actually an incorporated body. So it has no legal person of its own. Do you understand what I mean by legal person? Yes, some do, some don't. Right. You, as a human being, are a not only a person in fact, you are a person in law. Okay, you have a legal identity that the country, parliament, the tax system, NHS and everybody else has to acknowledge because you exist, right, as a citizen of the UK. Companies can do the same thing. Companies can be recognised in law as an entity in their own right. Yeah, that means they can partner, they can contract, they can be taxed, they can have all those things going on, but a trust in this way can't. Right, so you can't contract. Again, it's the same as a club. Personal trustees have to make the deals, make the contracts, have the liability. It can't borrow. Yeah, so it's actually reasonably limited. If you just want to run a small church, perfect. Until God gives you a bigger mandate, right? It was never great, was it? You wouldn't do it again, no. So we're knocking that off the list. Okay, this is the new one. Charitable Incorporated Organization, CIO, not a company. Instead of being, right, companies are incorporated through Companies House. That's why they're a company. Okay, so they go onto the register of companies. A CIO doesn't. It just goes straight through the Charity Commission. The Charity Commission issues it a number and it says you exist the minute we write you into the charity register, and you have now got a legal framework because the Charity Commission is a recognised legal framework. So it can have limited liabilities for its trustees. It has simplified governance because you don't have to report to the Charity Commission and Companies House. You only have to produce one set of reports and accounts. There is an asset lock, which means the stuff that the charity owns, if it ever folds, cannot be given away or nicked by its members. They have to be fed into another charity of the same type or similar. So those assets are locked into the charitable sector. Kind of good. It can contract, it can borrow, but it cannot become a company. So it's reasonably suitable for small to medium organisations. What's small to medium? Up to 5 million. That's still small, right? In the kingdom, that's super small, right? Okay, but for us, we might go, ooh, might be all right. Right. Cannot become a company. Why is that important? If you never envisage the day when it would stop needing to be a charity, then it ain't going to be a problem. But if there ever came a situation where the Charity Commission came and went, we don't like what you're doing because we now don't like Christians, and for whatever reason, the government outlaws any kind of faith groups being charities, all of them. That's just hypothetically. What would you do? Because if that was the case, it then said there's no such thing anymore as any kind of religious organisation being a charity, you'd have to shut. Not if you're a company. But this isn't a company. It's a charity. So if you wanted to stop being a charity but still wanted to continue doing your thing, without charitable status, you could if you were a company, limited by guarantee, but you can't if you're a charity. Is that likely to happen? Probably not. But it can never go backwards to being a company.
I think you can go the other way, though. You can turn a company into it, I think.
I was just going to say that. But yes, you're right, you can. You can go the other way. You can go from being a company limited by guarantee, charitable company, and you can drop the Company House bit and become just a charitable incorporated organisation. If you feel that's appropriate to do. Yes, you can.
Unfortunately, you can't do the other way. You can't turn a charity
into a
charitable
organisation. No, because you've already got a charity number.
At the moment, I'm legislating for a change in the law.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The problem is the charity number.
Yeah.
Yeah? Currently, until they find a way around that one. Because you'd lose, what you'd do is you'd lose everything that you've already built up as a charity under the old number. And they haven't got the brains to figure that one out. We're talking about a legal statutory body here. Okay, charitable company. Limited liability, bingo, we like that one. Registered at company's house and then later issued a charity number. So you start with the company, you then apply for charitable status. That's what we've done with Freedom Community Alliance. Would we have done that now that they've since introduced charitable incorporated organisations? Debatable. We'd have to have a look at the situation. It is a legal entity. It can contract, borrow, own assets, have bank accounts, all that stuff. It's very, very well understood. What is the drawback? There's no asset lock. So if you did wind it up, you could pretty much do what you like with it, depending what your constitution says. Yeah. So that's another thing to consider in your constitution. If we fold this, what do we do with the stuff and the money that's left, if there's any money left? It can cease to be a charity and still exist because it's a legal company. All right. The well understood bit is actually really significant. Because if you're ever thinking of trading with overseas companies or working with international ministries or foreign ministries or anything that does not understand the UK legal framework, you probably need to have the structure that they will get. Most banks are struggling with CIOs. Okay. So if you're trying to work with a foreign NGO, they might not understand that you don't have a company number, you've just got a charity number. So you might need to look at the framework and see what's appropriate, particularly if you're contracting, you know, outside of the sector or outside of the UK. I guess over the next 10 years they'll catch up, but right now it could be an issue if it's part of your blueprint. Right? Company limited by guarantee, so no charitable status. What's the difference between that and just a normal limited company? Well, this one has no shares. Limited company, shares. Members own the shares, members own the company. In this, the members form the company, but they have no ownership of it. Right? Do you get that? Do they have liability for it? Yep. How much? Well, within the membership, you state how much you're willing to be a guarantor for. You can make it a pound, if you like. So if the whole thing folds, goes down the toilet, you're only in for a quid. That's good on one hand, but it's bad if you basically fold in because you maladministered the company. So some people, you know, some organisations go crashing down the down the toilet like Kids Company for millions. Yes, there's lots of investigation about what went wrong, but what personal liability did the members have? Not a lot. Limited by guarantee, having just taken the government for 14 million the month before. Ouch. All right. So, company limited by guarantee, usually on its own without charitable status, is what you would use for a social enterprise. So something where you want to make some money, but you don't necessarily need the charitable status. We've got that for a project that we're running, doing various bits of trading and stripping garden machinery parts and all that sort of stuff for people. It can contract, it can trade, it can own assets, it can distribute or reinvest its profits in itself. If you set it up correct, it can give money away to a parent charity, for example. So that's quite good. But it can't take donations either, because it's not charity. All right. So, as you get through that lot, your blueprint will help you decide. So, the main considerations. Governance and authority take a long-term view. What activities, services, contractual arrangements will you need? Will you have to work with other organisations? What liability and risk appetite have you got? Can you and do you need to manage assets, including money? And do you want to be charitable, a social enterprise, or even a for-profit company? You could decide, I'm just going to register a company for shares and go make money. Better make sure that's on your blueprint. All right? So, as they say, the choice is yours. And I'll leave that with you. Okay. Thanks for a great day. Hope you've enjoyed the weekend. Time to go home.
I don't know. Do you want to say anything, Jonathan, about potential follow-up or anything?
Well, yes, it's just something that we felt we'd like to offer if anybody has ongoing needs.
Good man.
But I think Lindy and your team are happy, and you've obviously got people, but we wanted to say, if as you're setting things up, if you want support, vote for you. No, but that support is available if you yeah. want it and need it.
I think you were sort of also talking about locally that you might visit or help.
Yeah, I mean we can visit and come and talk through issues with you, engage if need be. That was it really.
Okay, cool.